I know there's other stories we could go through, and I really would have liked to, but we've got a lot to go through. So maybe we could share that over lunch if you want to with each other, or later in the day or whatever. Okay, the fifth principle is, after looking at the suffering, because of your thinking, reverse that and look at the thought behind the suffering. These are kind of long. If you have a thought that argues with reality, like Lorraine's talking, this shouldn't be happening, I should be able to work, I shouldn't be sick, then you have a stressful feeling, then you act on the feeling, and that creates more stress. It's like a vicious cycle. And rather than understanding the original cause, which is a thought, we try to change the stressful feeling by looking outside of ourselves and blaming other people. This phenomenon is called, and everybody's heard of this, projection or externalization.
That's reduction.
Huh?
Reduction.
No.
Projection.
You're projecting out what you don't take inside. When an event happens that causes internal stress, an alarm clock that says you need to look inside at what you're telling yourself goes off. And Iyana Van Zant had a cute acronym for that. When you need to do that, and it's pain, it's pay attention inward now. When you're feeling pain, whether it's emotional or physical. How do you know when you're projecting your stuff onto other people or events? If you receive what's happening to you as a point of interest or information, then you aren't projecting. But if it causes you internal stress, the mechanical reactive ego will tend to look for faults outside of yourself as a defense mechanism. So we judge in others that which we reject or disown in ourselves. And that's basically the definition of projection. The problem is, and this is one of Van Zant's quotes, I like it, what we can't be with won't let us be. You have to deal with it. People do horrible things, and Rain's worked in prisons on this, that land them in prison. Not because of what happened to them, but because they externalized their pain. Not because of that pain. They didn't look inward, they didn't deal with it, they took it out on other people. Okay, final principle is investigate the truth of your thoughts. And I'm just going to write the word investigate. You guys are getting pretty clever now, so I know you know what I'm talking about. It's a way to end confusion and experience peace. Inquiry is more than just a technique. It reveals the inner aspects of our being, our thought process, our past experiences, how we see the world, how we protect ourselves, or how we beat ourselves up. In self-questioning, our subconscious thoughts meet the moment because we're moving our thoughts into a conscious mode, like out of a dream state. It's like if you're driving on automatic pilot and you meant to go to church, but you wound up going to work, to the office, mm-hmm. and then you go, where am I going? Mm-hmm. You wake up to reality. It's a similar thing. You get out of that dream state and into reality. You get out of the subconscious, move it into the conscious. Often when we think we're being rational, we're really being spun by our own thinking, which can get us into painful positions that we uphold in the mind. Neuroscience identifies a part of the brain called the interpreter as the source of the familiar internal narrative, which is also that left brain, that gives us our sense of self. One scientist was quoted in the book and called Cell Level Healing. That was a good book. Quote, perhaps the most important revelation is precisely this. The left cerebral hemisphere of humans is prone to fabricating verbal narratives that don't necessarily accord with the truth. The left brain weaves its story in order to convince itself and you that it's in full control. It amounts to a spin doctor. The interpreter or left brain is really trying to keep our personal story together. To do that, we have to learn to lie to ourselves. We tend to believe our own press releases. That's a good one. So self-questioning or investigating the truth of our thoughts uses a different, less known capacity of the mind to find a way out of its own self-made trap. It's an ongoing and deepening process of self-realization where the mind notices each stressful thought and undoes it before it can cause any suffering. And this process of inquiry is the meat of Katie's work. I'll quote her here. Through inquiry, we discover how attachment to a belief or a story causes suffering. Before the story, there's peace. Then a thought appears, and we automatically believe it, and the peace disappears. We notice the feeling of stress in the moment. We investigate the story behind it, and we realize it probably isn't true. The feeling lets us know that we're opposing what is by believing the thought. It tells us that we're at war with reality. Okay. Now, these are just the principles, but the actual work itself is the inquiry process. And what she has developed, and you can get this off her website, is called a Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet.
The work?
Judge Your Neighbor. Yes.
No, the work, the form, that's
the work. Yes. Com.
Yeah, the work.com. Mm-hmm.
It's easier to judge your neighbor and then put those thoughts on overlaid on yourself than it is to try to look inwards the first time.
Yeah, you want to do that first. You don't want to start with yourself. Because we have 20/20 vision about how other people should live their lives and not our own. And plus you get your defense mechanisms. Until you're ready for it, you tend to defend yourself. And you're not looking. You don't want to look at some of your problems. Okay, so this first step is called a Judge Your Neighbor sheet. I don't have that for you. Again, you can download that when you get home. And it encourages you, and I'm going to use a naughty word, to bitch. In delicious detail about somebody or some happening. Now, this is a strictly confidential questionnaire that allows the ego to just go crazy without mental or moral censorship. This is the opportunity that the ego's been waiting for, and it will gladly tell you everything, like a child. So it's best to be judgmental, harsh, childish, and petty. Don't try to be wise or spiritual or kind. Those experienced in doing the process says they get pettier and pettier and more uncensored because it gets harder and harder to find something to get upset about over time. So when you commit to writing down your feelings, you find out a lot about your thinking and your values and your experiences. Get it out of your head, get it on paper. You take a look at what's been swirling around inside you for years without asking yourself about the cause of it, about the truth of it, about a solution. Sometimes we just get lost in the mind's chaos and we don't know what to do to get to feeling better. So in writing them down, you see your feelings in physical form, and through inquiry you begin to understand them and deal with them and heal them. This is what a therapist does, right?
Yeah.
So why not just do it for free?
Because people don't know how.
Be your own therapist. There you go. Okay, the next step of inquiry then is to respond to four main questions. After you've got your worksheet done. Now, you can do this on any topic, and start with, it goes into more than what's bothering you. She gets into lots of detailed questions to really bring it out, to really get that emotion out. So the first question in inquiry is, can you guess? Is it true? Katie says if you don't do anything else, this is the most important question you can ask yourself. What is the reality of it? And remember, in reality, shoulds and shouldn'ts don't exist. They're just observations or wishes. Okay, I'm going to give an example. Let's say you wrote down on your worksheet, I should have had this written down already, sorry. My children always, and I'm going to capitalize some words that are key, disrespect me. And I'm outraged about this. For example, they should clean up after themselves. Anybody have that feeling? Any moms out there?
Oh, yeah.
And you are left to do it yourself because your kids don't or won't? So I don't have I think some of you are going to know what some of these keys are in here after our discussion. So I don't have to do it. My children always disrespect me and I'm outraged. They should clean up after themselves, so I don't have to do it. Okay. These two sentences are rich with examples of these principles. The first one, my children always disrespect me, invites this question, is it true? Is cleaning up after yourself proof of respect or lack of respect for a person you live with? I mean, if that's true, a lot of husbands could be accused of disrespecting their wives. Right? Every time he leaves socks on the floor, I could say, you're disrespecting me. Was that proof of it, just because he leaves socks on the floor? Do I know his mind well enough to say he doesn't respect me? The other one is, do they always do this? These absolutes, like always and never, are tip-off that you're stretching the truth. Even if it's partially true, no one does anything all the time except breathe. The second statement has a should in it. They should clean up after themselves. And then, what does she say? Well, they shouldn't clean up after themselves until they do. That's the reality of it. It also implies that you're out of your business. Because they should be cleaning up after themselves. That's not your job, it's theirs. And finally, so I don't have to do it, argues with reality, because you don't have to do anything. If you want to do it, go ahead, acknowledge that, and do it without stressing yourself out. Do you understand how this principle is working with that? I try to make one that you can kind of accomplish a lot of stuff.